This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Dave has the day off. Steve Thompson sitting in. You normally hear me on Saturdays. College football final in the fall. Pleased to be joined by Pete Najarian today. Josh Wheeler is our producer. And Pete, there is so much going on this time of year. You got Golden Gopher football, you got the Vikes and Bears, you got the Timberwolves on the road at Boston, you got the Loons playing later today. You've got all that small college football. And oh, by the way, prep bowl in the rearview mirror.
It's unbelievable. This is the best time of the year, right? I mean, this is Christmas in November. It's absolutely phenomenal. I love what we're seeing, and I loved what we saw out of our Golden Gophers yesterday. I know we were on the wrong side of it, but it was only by a point. We did everything that we could have, should have. There were some turnovers that were costly, but it was a great football game, Steve. It really was. It was fun. I was lucky to be there. I was standing on the sidelines just watching these big guys move around the way they did, and the Golden Gophers have nothing to be embarrassed about, nothing to be they can look back and say, you know what, we played the game well. We had a couple of mistakes, and the biggest one being that fake punt, I think. In my mind, that was the biggest play of the game.
Yeah, and it's a year, Pete, where the margin of error has been so slim in most of these games. You think about the opener against North Carolina, yeah. One that probably got away. That game at Rutgers comes to mind, and then that game yesterday. I mean, the Gophers were right there. They just didn't seal the deal.
Yeah, it's been an incredible year. I go back to the Michigan game. Now, the Rutgers game, That's a different story for me. I didn't like the way we played. I don't like how we approached the game. I don't like the fact that we only ran the ball about 13 times. I think yesterday was exactly what Gopher football should look like. We had an offense that were we getting huge chunks running the football? No, but we put the ball in the hands of the running backs for 35 different times, and they got a little bit over 100 yards. Now, I know that's only about 3 yards a carry, but you've got to have that as part of your offense. You've got to sort of explore things on that side, and if you're getting three and a half yards per carry, I think that's enough. You've got to keep the defense honest, obviously, and I think that's one of the things we did so well. By the way, our defensive line and our defense in general played so much better against Penn State than they did against Rutgers. Against Rutgers, they were getting pushed around. It was embarrassing. We just didn't play well, I don't think, in that game. I don't think we ran the ball enough. We needed to do some more of that. But we've got some great receivers, so I understand why we want to get the ball in the air. But we shouldn't be a team that's throwing the ball 45 times. I think we're a team that we're probably best if we throw it 25 to 30 times. And Max Brosmer's been a great quarterback this year for the Gophers. I still look at that Michigan game and shake my head, Steve. I really do. The Rutgers game, we played poorly. The Michigan game, we played well. And if it wasn't for a bad call, we had a great opportunity to beat them in the big house, and they took that away from us.
In 11 games, the only game they really weren't in was the Iowa game. Mm-hmm. They got handled pretty good by Iowa. But speaking of the big rivalries, Floyd is in Iowa City. They have a chance. Paul Bunyan's axe. Wisconsin coming up quickly on Friday. Huge game, not only for the Badgers to get bowl eligible, but a chance for the Gophers to finish a regular year 7-5. This is a big game. It always is with the Badgers.
It is. This is a big one. You know, any of these big trophy games, and I'm not talking about the made-up trophy games. We got way too many of those these days. But when you've got a trophy with somebody that goes back over 100 years, like it is with Iowa, like it is with Michigan, like it is with Wisconsin, that's meaningful. And this rivalry has been there, and it's lived up to what all these rivalries are, which is, you know what? You can throw away what they did during the season. You go up there, and it turns into a different game. And I think that we have to be very careful. We can't look past Wisconsin by any means because of the fact that Nebraska just blew them off the map just yesterday. But I think we can learn from that. We can look at what Nebraska did that had so much success, and that's going to help us. And I think that the way PJ and the coaching staff is approaching with this football team has been great. I like what they did with this one-year player that we've got with Max Brosmer. Gosh, I wish we had him for another year, but this will be big for him, and he has stepped up when it's time to be – a guy who needs to step up, and he has done it. And I'm impressed with what he's been able to do this year with the offense and throwing the ball to Daniel Jackson and Spencer. And the one other mistake, I think, yesterday, by the way, was we threw to the tight end on that great gimmicky play. And I love the coaches for coming up with that flea flicker type of a play that we had yesterday, and we threw it to Gears. He gets the touchdown. I don't think we threw him the ball more than twice during the entire game. And tight ends are the position that you have to throw them the ball. Tyler Warren, the tight end slash running back slash everything for Penn State, he's probably one of the best in the entire country at that position right now. And I love what that kid brings. He's big, he's fast, he's athletic. But I think that it's something where the tight end is always open. I say it all the time as a former linebacker. You always let the tight end catch the ball. You want to get away and get in the passing lanes for the receivers. Well, that means throw the ball to the tight end. And we didn't do that yesterday. And I think when the games are there and we do really well offensively, we usually get the ball to the tight end four or five times. We didn't do that yesterday, and I think that was one of the missed parts of the offense that we had yesterday.
And the college game is started to mirror the pro game in that way. They have a bigger and bigger role. You look at how huge a tight end is in the NFL. You could argue, other than wide receiver number one, having a good tight end is super important.
You know, it's funny you say that. I would say you're 100% right on that. I don't really worry about receiver one. I'd rather have a big running back and get the ball to the tight ends. And occasionally when the defense does start to cheat up too much, then you can go to those wide receivers. But I think every team in America has great receivers. I truly do. Now, the guys who have a special tight end, that makes the difference. And if you go back all the way back to Joe Montana, what made Joe so great? Tight ends. What made Tom Brady so great? The tight ends. Most people can't even name a receiver on the teams for the Patriots. They all know it's Gronk, but they don't name a receiver. Just think about that for a minute and understand why that means, and I've said this forever, the tight ends are there, and if you've got big athletic tight ends, you have a great opportunity to have a great offense.
Pete Najarian, by the way, Dave has a day off. Steve Thompson sitting in on the program. Josh Wheeler is our producer today. A little bit more about college football. I've got to squeeze this in about the local teams, D2, D3 playoffs real quick, Pete. But before we get to a break, then we're going to talk a little high school football. I just want to slide this by you. Minnesota State on the road at Augustana, the Northern Sun champ. 10 points in the final minute and a half to win in advance. They'll be at CSU Pueblo next Saturday. Meanwhile, Bemidji State, long trip from Bemidji all the way down to Angelo State in Texas. They get a 10-point win. They'll be out at Western Colorado next Saturday. And then in D3, UW La Crosse beat Northwestern of Roseville to advance. And, by the way, Bethel got a win over Coe, and they're going to be at home against Lake Forest. St. John's was idle this week, and they're going to be home against La Crosse up at Clemens Stadium in Collegeville. So D2, D3, and then, by the way, the FCS pairings are going to come out. North Dakota State, they got upset down at South Dakota. We'll see if South Dakota State, who's now kind of the top dog in FCS, are they going to get the number one overall seed? And that's later today.
Those two South Dakota schools, Steve, are absolutely incredible, in my opinion. I marvel at what they've been able to do over the last few years. They've stepped over North Dakota State, and they are just absolutely incredible. And that's a big upset yesterday, I think, with NDSU. That's massive. I love what South Dakota is bringing to the plate right now. One of the two of those two teams, I think, gets to the finals.
Yeah, and it really is great football, too. I mean, they're getting a lot of talent. Kids that maybe don't get a look in the Big Ten, maybe don't get that opportunity, maybe don't get that opportunity in the SEC, but there's a lot of good football players in the Missouri Valley Football Conference and FCS. Hey, we got a break. We've got much more coming up. High school football, prep bowl. A little early this year. Normally it's a Friday and Saturday after Thanksgiving, and I love that. But they moved it up because Thanksgiving is late this year and the Vikes come home, etc. So We had games Friday and Saturday. State champions were crowned. The final game of the day, Elk River beat Alexandria, and Elk River head coach Steve Hamilton's going to join us on the Sports Huddle. Pete Najarian's in, Steve in for Dave, here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. Pete is here, Dave is not. Steve Thompson sitting in, Josh Wheeler, our producer on the program, here on the Sports Huddle. We'll talk Vikes a little bit later on. Timberwolves, the Wild playing well. They got beaten in a shootout by Calgary. The Loons continue their playoff run in the conference semifinals. We'll slide something in on that a little bit later on. Prep a little early this year at U.S. Bank Stadium. Here are the results. Minnesota, dominant year, beat Springfield 70-20 in their first game on Friday to win 1A. The Minnesota Vikings, maybe one of the more dominant seasons at any level in high school football history. Becker, Dwight Lundin, the legend, they beat Totino Grace in 4A, 24-8. Pete, Dwight Lundin, 55 years at the helm and another title. What a great story that is.
Sounds a little like Gagliardi, huh, up there at St.
Yeah,
John's.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, started as a young man and is just keeps going, and what a cool guy. 2A Jackson County Central over at Staples Motley, 42-26. And then the big school, 6A on Friday night. Our good buddy Dave Lee, the call on Channel 45. Maple Grove beat Minnetonka 28-21. The Crimson finish an unbeaten year. And then we switched to Saturday. Three games at U.S. Bank Stadium on Saturday. Fertile Bell Trammy won their first ever title, beating Hills Beaver Creek 20-8, 9 player. And then in 3A, Stewartville, great team, beat Daz Cocato, another good football team all year, 43-22. And then in the final game of the day, Elk River, another title. They beat Alexandria 33-24, and the Elks head coach Steve Hamilton joins us on the line. And Steve, congrats on another great year and another title.
Yeah, thank you. It was a different, because we had to beat four teams twice, so it's always tough to beat really, really good teams twice, and to beat Chan and to beat Alex back to back like that was pretty special for us.
Coach, you know what was really special, obviously, for you, had to be that opening drive of the second half. Can you talk us and walk us through that a little bit? I mean, 17 plays, 80 yards, and you used up, what, 9 minutes and 32 seconds? That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was kind of our game plan. They have two really, really good defensive tackles who also started offensive tackle for them, and we thought if we could get physical with them and double-team them basically every play and go right at them, that we could hopefully wear them out, which would help the defense too. Obviously, it made it for a much more of a grind and 3 or 4 yards at a time, which we're okay with. And, yeah, and helps our defense, obviously, when they only have the ball for 2 minutes in the third quarter.
Yeah, and, you know, Steve, over the years, you run that power T, and everybody knows it, and it's like, here we go. But it is all about patience, because eventually a big gainer, I've seen your team enough where it's kind of like, you know, 2-3 yards, and all of a sudden you break a big one. It puts a lot of pressure on that defense to make their reads and figure out who has the ball.
It does, and, you know, I think what we've gotten really good at is we're going to take what you give us. And if you are bound and determined to try to take trap away and prevent the big play, then we're more than willing to do what we did yesterday. And, you know, and defensively, the first time we played Alex, we hit some big traps and some big plays, and they've obviously did a great job scheming to take that away. So we had to be happy with just taking what they're giving us. And, yeah, the result is a 9.5-minute drive with a touchdown. It probably doesn't get any better than that for us. And, you know, keeping Chase Thompson and that offense off the field was huge.
Which is exactly what you did. You look at that second half, and they had, you know, the third quarter, they had the ball for less than 2 minutes. In the fourth quarter, they had it for 2 minutes and 2 seconds. It's just absolutely amazing what that offense was able to do and chew up that clock the way they did. Coach, is there something about that offense, though? Was it because of the kind of personnel that you've got? Or is this structure, this whole power T offense, is that something that you've always believed in?
Well, it's funny. This is my 27th year as a head coach, and you know, I started in Michigan, and we were spread 27 years ago when everybody was swing T and just running the ball. and we were different. And then I had to make a change at my second school in Michigan. We just athletically could not line up with teams we were playing, and spread. We couldn't get anyone open. And I saw this offense from John Shillitoe, who's still the guru back in Michigan. They're playing for a state title again next week. And, you know, we kind of morphed into it. And then when I went to Georgia, we did a lot of this, but still some other things. And then when we came here, collectively, when I met with the staff, and we just said, okay, you know, we've really struggled here. They were spread. They had lost 16 games in a row. Let's just commit to getting really good at this. And it does fit. It has to be a fit. And Elk River, the kids fit. They're just hardworking, kind of lunch pail kids that you saw that yesterday. They're willing to just grind it out. And then, you know, when you have some really good athletes thrown in there like we do this year, it can make it pretty explosive.
Yeah, it is. And as someone who tries to call the games occasionally, it is hard to figure out who has the ball. These kids must work together all the time on the ball fakes, hiding the football. The quarterback, outstanding job. Channel 45 captured it beautifully on how well they hide the football. It's extraordinary.
It is, but, you know, I always look at spread teams and the amount of time that they put in timing their passing game. You know, it's no different than that. It's just we're practicing something a little different, and I always tell my quarterbacks, this is not going to be, you know, you're going to go home and paint a line in the yard and work on your steps, which is a little different than obviously what spread teams would do. And you got to get the right guys that want to buy into that, and then you get a kid like Levi Harris who's an explosive athlete, and you can do a lot of great things.
Coach, it's interesting. And for the people who don't know what this power T is, you've got two tight ends, you've got three running backs. It's a T formation style offense that does a lot of trickery within that, actually, and I do a great job. I'm curious because I had a discussion with Coach Lou Holtz. I played for him at the University of Minnesota for the 2 years that he was here, and I asked him about 5 years, 8 years out of college. I said to him, I said, Coach, what is it about you bringing the kind of offense that you brought to us, which was an option style offense? And he said, look, we might not have the same talent level as an Ohio State or a Michigan back then. I think we do now, but back then. But he said, you know, athletically, I can get these kind of players to buy into this kind of an offense, and it really is something where I don't need the ultra blue chip type players for that. I can just work with the guys that we've got. Is that sort of, it sounds like that's exactly sort of the methodology and the rationale for why you run this power T offense. Is that right?
Yeah, it's certainly the reason we got into it. I was in a suburb by Detroit, and we were playing a lot of Detroit schools. There was a lot of Division I talent that we didn't have. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of the great equalizer. You know, if you don't know where the ball is, it slows down that speed. And if you can get that speed to take one step the wrong direction, it takes them two steps to get back where they're supposed to be. So all those things help balance the playing field. Last night it was not a whole lot of deception. We just were going to go right at them and try to grind it out. And thankfully that worked, but it's a big piece, but at the end of the day, the people who don't get enough credit in this offense are the guys up front, because they're the guys that they won that game for us last night. You know, controlling the line of scrimmage is key. So it's a really physical offense. You have to get people to buy into that, but it's exactly like, you know, Lou Holtz told you, it's the same idea. We'll level the playing field and we'll do something different. We'll do something where maybe we can negate their speed a little bit.
Steve Hamilton, Elk River head coach. Elks won the 5A title, beating Alexandria. And before he let you go, the two turnovers helped as well. A couple of picks. That went a long way to sealing the deal in this win over Alexandria, didn't it, Steve?
It did, and I got to give Coach Cross and defensive staff so much credit, because we came into this year and put in an entire new defense, the terminology, everything. And, you know, Coach Cross has been coaching over 30 years, and you know, for him to kind of scrap everything and learn everything new, it's oftentimes a lot harder for us coaches to learn the new things than the kids. And they were phenomenal. I mean, Alex had two drives, and they both ended with interceptions, so you probably couldn't ask for anything more.
Well, Steve, good to visit with you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, guys.
All right, there is Steve Hamilton, another state title at Elk River, running the old Power T. It is 10:31. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Much more coming up on the Sports Huddle. Pete Najarian is here. Dave Schwartz has a day off. Steve Thompson sitting in here on News Talk. 830-WCCO.
What's up, guys?
What's going on, buddy? You got a lot of good stuff?
Oh, I try to have good stuff. We got to get the bed going here. Hang on. Technology, it's failing me. All right. We're going to start off with baseball because you guys love baseball. We're going to get the non-football stuff out of the way because my hands are tied, as I just told Pete. This week, we saw many awards dished out in Major League Baseball. Shohei Ohtani wins the NL MVP. Also, Aaron Judge wins the AL MVP, among other winners. No real surprises. My question for you, Steve, we'll start with you. Should the MLB, when it comes to better marketing this sport, move the awards to maybe a different slot? I mean, here we are just like days from Thanksgiving. And besides GMs, nobody's really talking about baseball right now.
MLB needs to do a better job across the board marketing their stars. We've been hearing it for years. Oh, Ohtani is putting up Babe Ruth type numbers here early in his career. Signed that record contract. He's in LA, huge media market. Sure, some people know about Ohtani, but they've got to get more creative. Ohtani's an unbelievable talent. He can pitch. He's a great slugger. And then you got Aaron Judge. These are the kind of stars that should fill ballparks when they come to town. It's all on MLB if we're not doing a better job of marketing the stars. And I believe it's still that lingering bad blood between the owners and players. They've got to get on the same page and realize that their sport is struggling, and they need to market the stars better.
Steve, I totally agree with you, and what I find absolutely mystifying is why wouldn't this come out right after the World Series or somewhere, you know, close, very close to the World Series? That would make so much more sense. This gets completely lost, let's say it like it is, lost because of the fact that look at the weekend we just had in college football. Unbelievable. Then, of course, you move over to the NFL. Major League Baseball's got to figure out this thing has got to be done a different way than it has been. Get those stars out there in front of people when they can. And I agree with you, Steve. I've said it for multiple years. If Ohtani's on a team that comes into your town, go see him. You just have to do that. That's how good he is.
Yeah, and these guys are phenomenal athletes, Pete. You know, you played at the highest level. Major League Baseball players, that hand-eye, it's incredible.
It is.
All right, Pete, we're going to go to you for this one. You did text me about this. We will probably dive into this more later. This past week, a name familiar with Vikings fans in Daniel Jones was initially moved to the number three, not number two, but number three spot for the Giants depth chart at quarterback, and now revealed that Jones has been granted his release set for tomorrow at 3 p.m. Pete, where do we see as a possible landing spot for Mr. Daniel Jones? And so far, Vikings and Jaguars are the two favorites.
I would think that it might end up being the Jaguars, but the reality is people are talking so much about it up here in Minnesota. Is it the Vikings? Is it something where we actually want to take a shot at Daniel Jones? Clearly, he's had a lot of pressure on him. He's struggled. The reason he got the big contract he got was because of the way he played against the Vikings in that playoff game a couple of years ago. But it's amazing to me, Josh, as I'm sitting there looking at this, that this is being discussed this time of year, especially for the Vikings, given the fact that, so let's say, do you pick him up? Now, what does that mean to next year? Yeah. Is Darnold out? Obviously, you've already drafted JJ. What do you do? It's a very complicated thing, I think, for the Vikings if they decide to jump in there. But I would say this, be a heck of a backup quarterback if that's the way they're going
to
go.
Steve, before you jump in, I just want to add to that, too. There's so much quarterback traffic if you add this on top of Darnold, on top of JJ. There's just so much congestion with quarterbacks, and I feel like it's a whole lot of nothing with Daniel Jones. I just feel like we've kind of seen him at his peak performance already, and I don't know if getting a new system with the Vikings is going to change anything. Obviously, it worked for Sam Darnold, but I think we can all agree Sam Darnold is a better quarterback than Daniel Jones.
Right now.
Yeah, Steve.
But if you want to keep your season afloat, because we all know just about every team in the NFL, that starting quarterback gets hurt, they're in trouble. Vikes are no different. Starting quarterback gets hurt, Darnold gets nicked up, and he has been nicked up a little bit during the season. Jones is an insurance policy because they feel like they have the makeup to get on a little bit of a run. I'm not saying hoist the Lombardi, but they are a playoff team. And if you can grab Jones right now, I think you worry about next year. If you can get him, he's a good insurance policy.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have money for it, too. You can't just say, hey.
Real money.
We're going to take a flyer on you for free. Yeah, we're not talking, that kind of money. Monopoly money. Steve, we're going to go to you for this one. With their loss in Norman last night, Kalen DeBoer and the Alabama Crimson Tide are now 8-3 on the season. They have the Iron Bowl next week against Auburn. Do you see Alabama still making it into the college football playoff despite being a three-loss team? Keep in mind, it's OU and Vanderbilt as one of their two losses so far this season.
Yeah, the loss to Vandy really hurts. I think Kalen DeBoer is on the hot seat. Now, I just want to point out he's from Milbank, South Dakota. He played at Sioux Falls College. I called his games in college way back in the day, so I've known Kalen a long time, and I hate to say it, but Kalen's on the hot seat. He better win the Iron Bowl next week, and based on their resume this year, they are not a playoff team.
It is amazing, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, Steve. It's incredible to see that this is where Alabama football is, and it's not like they've lost their quarterback. He's been playing, Josh. You told me you sniffed out that Oklahoma had a great shot to win this football game. You were right. I was wrong because I looked at it and I thought, you know what? I think it would take a miracle. Oklahoma has not played great this year. Let's be honest. I mean, when you look at some of the losses also like Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt's just got over 500. They're a 6-5 football team. You can't have losses like that if you're Alabama. And Alabama, three losses, I think they're out. I really do. Yeah. I don't think they can be in there.
Yeah, and I do want to point out, too, because for those that actually followed it yesterday and watched it, there was an illegal touching. It was questionable, but it was an illegal touching call on Alabama that brought back one of their really amazing plays that they made. It was an amazing catch in the end zone, one toe tap in the back of the end zone, and I suggest anybody go back and watch it. But there's a lot of fingers that are pointing to that being the reason that, like, momentum switched around and the refs wanted Bama to lose. I want to remind people that the second half of that game, especially, Alabama was dropping the football every inch of the field, and they kept turning the ball over. They couldn't stop shooting themselves in the foot, and I feel like that's just a lot of what we've seen from this team so far from Alabama, unfortunately.
And we're talking season. 24-3. It's not like this was a close game. No. This is a 24-3 football game.
It was nowhere close. Yeah. Plus, it's in Norman. It's a tough spot to play.
Yep.
Speaking of former Big 12 teams, we have a tie up at the Big 12, Mr. Pete Najarian. Arizona State, BYU, Iowa State, and Colorado all at 6-2. Who do you see squeaking into the CFP and at the end of the season?
I tell you what, Arizona State, did anybody even think of Arizona State at the beginning of the year? I don't think so. No. But Arizona State's amazing. BYU's got a heck of a football team, but they've lost a couple of games late. That's not very good. Iowa State actually still has a pretty decent record. I look at Colorado at 8-3. I don't know how Colorado can get in there. They stumbled, and you can't stumble this late in the season and still have three losses. I'll tell you what, if Colorado gets in and then I look over and I don't see Alabama in there, I start shaking my head a little bit. So the Big 12 is definitely interesting. It's amazing this year. This is a really good conference, though. I really like what these upper-end teams are really looking like this year.
Yeah, I think any time you lose at Kansas, speaking of Colorado, that's got to be a disqualifier on some level because it has been such a struggle at Kansas for the most part. No, I know they're better 4-4 in the Big 12, just a game under. They can still get bowl eligible in their 12th game of the year if they're able to get a W. But, Colorado, there's all those rumors about Deion Sanders and his son making the jump. His son will make the jump to the NFL. Will Deion follow? Will that be in Dallas? that's tough because it is all about the Big Ten and the SEC, really, when it comes to college football. In some ways, in my opinion, it's hard to really take the champion of the Big 12 all that seriously.
And there you have it. That is today's Fast Breaks. Was that exciting, Steve?
I thought it was great. I thought it was great. I didn't want to rip on Deion Sanders too much. Because no. I felt like since the minute he arrived in Boulder, and I don't know how you feel about it, Pete, but it's always felt like he's had a foot out the door. Like, yeah, I'm going to do my thing here, but I'm not going to be around long. And it still feels like that.
It could be. You know, he came out pretty, I think he had a pretty strong statement when he said he wants to be around kids, though, and develop kids, yeah. And that they don't do development at the NFL level. So we'll see. I mean, sometimes these coaches say what they want people to hear, and then they say they do something completely different. And I don't think that he's any different than anybody else. I think that's a strong possibility. But, you know, he's done a lot of good things, I think, at Colorado. He's obviously got the ticket sales there and all the things that he has done recruiting-wise and so forth. But he's done a magnificent job with what he's done, especially just a couple of years deep. But I don't know. He's a different kind of a guy as well. So he's a guy who can use the media probably better than any coach I've ever seen.
All right, quick break. We've got much more. As a matter of fact, Gopher gymnastics coming up. And, of course, we all know about the men's gymnastics story over at the University of Minnesota, and we'll get into that here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. It is the Sports Huddle. Pete Najarian is in. Dave Schwartz has a day off. Steve Thompson here. Josh Wheeler is our producer. And Mike Burns, University of Minnesota Gymnastics. We all remember the story when the program was eliminated. Heartbreaking story. A lot of great success. A lot of great history to that program over the years. Mike, welcome to the program. Good to visit with you.
Hey, thanks for having me back, you guys. Always fun to chat with you guys.
Yeah, Mike, I'll tell you what, we're really excited to have you here. For the people who don't know, and everybody should know this, but you're coming off a year where you won the national title, and this is a sport that kind of got kicked to the curb a few years ago, but there's a lot of really good and positive things going on right now, Mike, and I was looking at your team today or yesterday, and you have a lot of young guys coming in, it looks like. What does it look like for this coming year for Gopher men's gymnastics?
Well, I think I told these guys early in the season, I said, you guys have tasted victory, and it tastes really good, doesn't it? And they all agreed. And we are set to defend our title. And, you know, when you get to that level in whatever sporting, event you might be in, you just get hungry for more. And one of our mottos is just stay hungry. And these guys have been really, really hungry. You know, we have had some setbacks in terms of, our training situation. We're no longer in Cook Hall, which we've been in since it was built in 1936. We got asked to move out, which we did. And currently we're training in five different locations during the course of every week. So we have 23 guys on our team, and we're carpooling around the Twin Cities to gyms like Mini Hops in Plymouth and North Shore and Maple Plain and Twin City Twisters in Champlin. And then we actually, Recwell was allowed us to set up a couple of pieces of equipment that are easy to set up and tear down twice a week in Cook Hall, on the third floor of Cook Hall. So we kind of look across the main gym and see our old place and go, yeah, I wish we were still there. But anyway, you know, it is what it is. We found a way. And one thing that I'll just tell you about these kids, they are the most resilient group of kids I've ever had a chance to work with, because they could have easily all just thrown their arms up and said, yeah, this kind of sucks, let's just move on. And they didn't. They like what they're doing. They like the success they had. Our recruiting is going off the books. It's crazy. I mean, we got three kids in this weekend that have all loved the place. And, you know, the University of Minnesota is a really easy place to recruit to because it's such a great university. And, we're just going to continue to provide opportunities for kids that want to continue to do gymnastics at the college level. And we're doing a good job with it.
Yeah, and Mike, what an inspiring story. I think anybody who follows the U or follows sports, you know, are really rooting for this program and rooting for this club. And, you know, getting you back on campus, how's that proceeding? I know you said a couple pieces of equipment at Cook Hall, but is there any momentum to get a permanent home on campus for this club?
On campus is going to be nearly impossible. Just the I've been here 20 years, and for the first 17 years as the head coach for the varsity team, I was always on the lookout for a new place to go. Now, thankfully, the women's team, they're building a new nice, 15,000-20,000 square foot complex right next to the football training facility. So they're going to move out of Pike Gym into a really nice place, which I'm really super happy for them. Excited that they're going to get what they need and what they want. So because the space on campus is so limited, we are currently in the process of just scouring the about a 2 to 3 mile radius around the university to see if there's any warehouse space with high enough ceilings, with enough columns that aren't in the way to put our equipment up and build a gymnastics business that can generate some revenue by virtue of teaching recreational classes and that kind of thing, but also have a home for our guys to train so we don't have to be, carting them all over town every day of the week.
Mike, is there, and I know we only got a minute, but is there any possibility with any new facilities in the near future, however, and what kind of money is that going to take, would you say?
Oh, that's a that's a serious chunk of change. So, Pete, I'm not sure if you want to throw out a loan our way, but if you're thinking love to have a conversation offline.
We'll do that. But,
so it's a big nut to crack, obviously. But I got a lot of energy. Even though I'm qualified for Medicare right now, I still got a lot of energy in this whole body of mine, and we're going to continue to fight and just kind of scratch to find a way to exist and maintain the level of existence that we've had, which is at a very high level.
All right, Mike, well, continued good luck. I know we're all rooting for you. Once again, the University of Minnesota Men's Gymnastics Club, Mike Burns, thank you.
National champs.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, we got to run. The huddle continues in a moment.